This afternoon, we want to look again at 2 Samuel. And we come to 2 Samuel chapter 11. A lot of times in our life, we place ourselves in situations that allow Satan to tempt us. And when we're in those situations, we still have choices. Unfortunately, sometimes we choose wrong. And when we choose wrong, there are dire consequences. Because we not only impact our lives, but we can also impact others' lives as well. And it's like Jesus told his disciples, we're not to look back, and we're not to look to tomorrow, but we're to look to today, because today has enough troubles. Today we face enough battles. Today we face enough temptations. Today we have enough encounters with a world system that's against us and philosophies that try to undermine our faith and destroy our relationship with God. Well, I want you to know it was no different in David's life. David faced the same trials and temptations that we face. He lived in a world that was filled with the same spiritual battles. And oftentimes, the thing is, the more opportunities that God gives to you and the places of that He puts you with greater responsibility, the greater the attacks and assaults are upon you. Because when Satan gets someone to sin or fall, who holds a position of authority, it not only impacts him, but it impacts many others who look to him or look to her. And this is the case with David. As we studied last Wednesday night, David had sent his troops out to under Joab and Joab's brother. And they went out and they were fighting against the Ammonites, and they defeated the Ammonites. And now we're coming back, and it's come back. They came back to Jerusalem, but now they're being sent out again. Another uprisings have occurred. As you go through the Old Testament, you see that the nation of Israel was very seldom ever at rest against its enemies, just as modern day Israel can never be at rest against her enemies. Because Satan is a busy guy, and he wants to destroy Israel. And if he can destroy it from without or within, he'll do it either way. I want you to understand what's happening in Israel right now, and just in light of this, what we're going to study. Satan's trying to destroy modern-day Israel from without, but he's also trying to destroy modern-day Israel from within. He's trying to get the leaders of Israel to turn on one another. And to right now, one of the leaders is saying we need to have elections in September. And if you have elections in Israel, it's not even like elections here, because they have them. They have a parliamentary form of government, you have to put together coalitions. There aren't just two parties, and so it takes time, and it takes a lot of effort. And they're in the middle of a war, and their enemies are trying to destroy them from without. So now you've got people within the nation trying to rise up, and if you can imagine trying to hold elections in the middle of a war when you're having rockets shot at you. Well, that's one way that Satan tries to do it, get the leadership all stirred up so that they're not there to lead the people, and get at the same time have the enemies attack from without. Well, same thing's happening in the time of David. Now, David was a king, and so he was the final authority, and he had the final authority. And let's read this account. It's a sad account, but it's an account, and it really happened. And it came to pass after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to do battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. And David tarried still in Jerusalem. Now, I just want to pause here. They're still fighting. They're going back to fight Ammon again. And David sends everybody out, and it says that in the spring of the year. Why would they fight in the spring of the year? Israel has a similar climate to ours. It's not as cold by any means because they are further south. But they have a similar thing where the spring of the year is the same as our spring of the year. And during the winter, they can have snow, they can have bad weather, they can have different things that occur. So they wouldn't typically fight battles when there's bad weather. But when the weather gets good, the enemies of Israel begin to attack. And as they're beginning to attack, David sends his Joab, his nephew, and Joab's brother out with the armies. But David stays back. Typically, the kings would go with. Remember, David was always going with the army before. He had led the army in victories, multiple victories. Even when Saul was king, Saul would go with the army. But David stays in Jerusalem. And this is going to be to David's detriment. And it came to pass in an evening tide that David arose from his bed and walked upon the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing herself, and the woman was very beautiful to look upon. Now, I'll pause here again. How many wives did David have? If you look, I believe it's 10 at this time. He was violating God's perfect plan in that area as well. But David was a man who did not need to have a wandering eye. He had his wives at home. And David should not have been on the roof. And if you can picture the way that the structures of the city would be, the king's palace sat on higher ground and would be higher than the other places. The house that Bathsheba is in is Uriah's house. Uriah was Bathsheba's husband. Uriah was one of David's elect men. And you'll find his name amongst the mighty men of David, Uriah the Hittite. And it's amazing because Uriah was a Canaanite who had really come to faith in God. He believed in God, and even though he was a Canaanite and should not have been part of Israel, he believed in God, and so he had not only believed in God, but he believed in the cause of God and the nation of God. He believed in Israel, and he followed David because he trusted David. And so Uriah's house would be built lower than David's house, and they didn't have indoor plumbing like we have. And so oftentimes, what would they be bathing? And she was bathing outside on the roof of the house, and David was up higher looking down. And so we see this set up, and really, Satan placed this temptation before David. And David sent and inquired after the woman, and one said, "Is not this Bathsheba the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" So I want to see two things that David's told when he inquires about her. He's told that whose father she is, who her father is, but also who her husband is. Does David know who Uriah is? Of course David knows who Uriah is. And so we see that this not only is a temptation for David to commit a sexual sin with Bathsheba, but it's also a temptation to come against the trust of one of his men who's placed his trust in him, and to totally ignore that allegiance of that man to David. And so David is faced really with a double temptation, and the deal is, how is he to respond? First of all, I want you to see that David did something wrong initially right away. As he walked out on his roof and he looked down and he saw a woman bathing, he could have turned away immediately, gone back in the house, and ignored it. He didn't. He lingered. And as you linger in the face of sin, it enables the temptation to grow stronger on your lusts and your heart. And that's exactly what happened with David. And then the second thing, he still did not know who she was, and he did not have to send someone to inquire who this woman was. But he did that as well. And so the second thing he did is he began to yield to the temptation in more than one way. We can yield to the temptations that are placed before us in more than one way. And when we begin to yield, it gives Satan stronger and stronger avenues to tempt us deeper and deeper. And that's exactly what was going on here. And the woman, and David sent messengers and took her, and she came in unto him, and he lay with her, for she was purified from her uncleanness, and she returned unto her house. It was that time of the month for her, and she was purified from it. She was cleansed, and that may be one of the reasons she was out bathing herself. And the thing is, what you as you look at this, as she comes in, now Bathsheba is not totally without excuse, but I want you to understand the situation that she faced. The king was calling her. Okay? The closest thing that we could have is the president of the United States would call us and say, I need to have you do this. And it's not a request, it's a command. And you'd feel obligated to do it. However, she would have to come, but when he instructed her, this is what I want you to do, she could have said no. It may have cost her, because he, after all, he was the king. And I want you to understand what it means to be a subject of the king in a Middle Eastern country at this time. The king had absolute power. Now, would David have had her put to death? I highly doubt it, because after all, David did love the Lord, and I can't see that he would have done that. But the thing is, he had the power to do that. If she didn't do what he said, he could have her put to death. He could have all kinds of things done. She yielded. So she was faced with a different form of temptation, but they both yielded to the temptations and didn't look to the Lord and trust in God. Okay? And what happens is it says in verse 5, and the woman conceived and sent and told David and said, I am with child. Okay? So she conceived and she bore, she's with child. And the child cannot be Uriah's, because where is Uriah? Uriah's out fighting the battle. So David knows, this is my child. Now he's got a problem. Oftentimes, when we yield to temptation, consequences of that temptation's yielding to that temptation, consequences arise, and those consequences can be evident to more than just us. And that was going to be the situation in about 9 months. It was going to be pretty evident, and probably be evident more in faster than 9 months, that Bathsheba was bearing a child, because a woman's body changes. And it's pretty evident after about 4 or 5 months that something's going on. And so David is faced with another problem. What do you do when you're caught in the middle of sin and you've yielded to temptation? Now, John tells us what we do is we are to confess that sin, and God is faithful and just to forgive us of that sin, to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Doesn't mean he's going to take away the consequences, but he'll cleanse us from all righteousness. And that would have been the greatest thing for David to do at this moment in time, to confess the sin, to call Uriah and deal with it in that manner. But he didn't chose to do that. Instead, like many of us have done in our lives, we try to cover up the sin, thinking, well, it's just a sin between me and God, or between me and somebody else, and nobody's going to know. And so that was David's philosophy. And David sent to Joab, saying, send me Uriah the Hittite, and Joab sent Uriah to David. Okay? Why did he send for Uriah? Verse 8. And David said to Uriah, go down to thy house and wash thy feet, And Uriah departed out of the king's house, and there followed him a mess of meat from the king. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his lord, and went not down to his house. Now what did David mean by Uriah? Go wash your feet, go down to your house. What he was saying is go cleanse yourself, get yourself ready, spend some time at home, have some R&R with your wife. That's what he was telling him to do. Okay? And then to make it even more attractive to him, David sends gifts of food and feasts down for Uriah and Bathsheba to eat. Figuring this will get Uriah in the house. And once he's in the house, then I'm home free, because Uriah can be said to be the father because he came home and he had relationships with his wife, which is totally normal, and now I'm going to be home free. The only problem is Uriah is a man of great conviction, a man of great integrity, and Uriah got called home from what? The battle. He was one of David's mighty men. He was one of the men that David trusted in the most. And he'd been out there fighting. Who was still out there? All the rest of David's mighty men. All of Israel's warriors were out there. Joab was out there. Joab's brother was out there. They're all out there fighting, and Uriah's at home. Uriah, under great conviction of what is right and what is wrong, he says, why should I be at home enjoying my wife, enjoying this food, enjoying all of this pleasure, and my colleagues are out there fighting on behalf of Israel against the enemies of Israel? This is wrong. So Uriah, it says, went and slept with the king's servants on the king's doorstep. He was going to make it pretty evident, I'm not going to go down to my house and enjoy the things that none of the other men get to enjoy. I'm going to be a servant of the king and show that I'm a servant of the king, and if he doesn't want me out there, I'm not going to enjoy the pleasures of my own house. Verse 10, and when they had told David, saying, Uriah went not down into his house, David said unto Uriah, comest thou not from thy journey? Why then didst thou not go down to thine house? Okay? David said, didn't you come from the battle? Didn't you come from where I called you? And it's a rhetorical question, because of course Uriah had come from the battle. And he said, well, why didn't you sleep at the house? Well, Uriah tells him. And Uriah said unto David, the ark and Israel and Judah abide in tents. Okay? The ark and Israel and Judah abide in tents. Now, what is he speaking of there? Well, the ark of the covenant would often be taken with them to the battles. But even at this particular time, the ark of the covenant resided in a tent, even if it was still kept in Jerusalem or in the city of David. And all of those of Judah and Israel that were out fighting the battle, guess where they got to sleep? They slept in tents. They didn't get to sleep in their houses. They were sleeping in tents. They were in the battle. And when they rested in tents, and that was the greatest luxury they had. My lord Joab and the servants of my lord are encamped in the open fields. Shall I then go into mine house to eat and to drink? In other words, you gave me all this food to eat and drink this food, and to lie with my wife, to enjoy my wife, and we have time together. As thou livest, and as thy soul liveth, I will not do this thing. Now, this should have been enough to convict David, because David knows who God is. David has trusted in the Lord. David calls on the Lord. David walks with the Lord. But it doesn't mean that even as a Christian, we can't fall into sin, and we become so blinded by our own sin and by our own desire to cover up that sin that we don't even see that the consequences of sin and the reality of obedience are laid before us. Uzziah is showing David what it is to be a faithful man. to be faithful to the one who is over you. Who's over David? God. Nobody's over the king, but God's over the king. And David needed to be as faithful to the Lord as Uriah was to David. And Uriah was showing this to David by his actions and by his words. And David said to Uriah, "Tarry here today also, and tomorrow I will let thee depart." So Uriah abode in Jerusalem that day and the morrow. And when David had called him, he did eat and drink before him, and he made him drunk. And at evening he went out to lie on his bed with the servants of his Lord, but went not down to his house. Now I want you to see what David did next. He tried to get Uriah so that he wouldn't think what he was doing. He got him drunk. Figuring, and the excuse he used is, "I'm going to send you back to the front, but before you go, let's just have a good meal. You need your energy. You need this, and so you're worthy of this. So let's have a good meal." And David fed him, made him drink a lot of alcoholic beverages because he got drunk. Figuring Uriah'd get drunk and then he'd go home. But Uriah didn't go home. Instead, he laid down with the servants again at the foot of David's house. Well, what is David going to do now? And it came to pass in the morning that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. Now, this is really awful. He is sending Uriah's death notice by Uriah. Sin can get its claws into us so much that we don't even realize what we're doing and how much we're hurting people. And he wrote the letter saying, "Set Uriah at the forefront of the hottest battle, and retire ye from him, that he may be smitten and die." Wow. And Uriah is taking this letter. Put him where the greatest fighting is going, and then have everybody put him at the very front, and then have everybody retreat except Uriah. And he will be sure to be killed. And he wrote the letter saying, "Set Uriah at the forefront." Verse 16, "And it came to pass when Joab observed the city that he assigned Uriah into a place where he knew the valiant men were." And the valiant men is speaking of the best warriors of the other city. He set him to attack that area of the city. If you understand the way that the cities were built at this time, they had walls around them. Walls of protection. And so you had to somehow get by the wall, either scaling over it, knocking it down, going through it, through doors that were in it. But it gave great advantage to the soldiers above because they could shoot arrows, they could throw rocks, they could do a number of things. And you were really indefensible against a lot of it. And especially the weakest area would be the easiest to get over. The strongest area was where they would, oftentimes the place that they felt that the enemy would attack first, they put their most valiant men or their best warriors there. So David knew this, and he told Joab, "Observe and see where their best warriors are, where their valiant men are, put Uriah and have them attack that area." And the men of the city went out and fought with Joab, and there fell some of the people of the servants of David, and Uriah the Hittite died also. And Joab sent and told David all things concerning the war, and charged the messenger, saying, "When thou hast made an end of telling the matters of the war unto the king, and if so be that the king's wrath arise, and he say unto thee, Wherefore approached ye so nigh unto the city when ye did fight? Knew ye not that they would shoot from the wall? Who smote Amalek, the son of Jerubbaal, and did not a woman cast a piece of millstone upon him from the wall, that he died in Thebes? Why went ye nigh the wall? Then say thou, thy servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. Joab knew David was going to question what he'd done, because it was not the way that David fought battles. David didn't go and attack, send his men in to be killed. I want you to understand, it wasn't only Uriah that apparently died here, because otherwise it wouldn't have been such a big deal that David would have gotten angry when he heard that Joab sent men to attack the walls. But Joab wanted him to be reminded, you're the one that told me to do this. I didn't do it, you told me to do it. Didn't Joab do right? No, he didn't do right either, because he was putting one of his best men to death at the word of his uncle, David. And the thing is, he could have questioned, he could have stopped it, but he didn't. And he also knew how to protect himself. And it's not unlike people today that hide behind, well, I was just doing what my orders were. How many times have you heard that? The Nazis did it in Germany. Well, I was just putting these people to death in the gas chambers because I was told to do it. It was my orders. I just put Uriah to death at the wall because you told me to do it. So when he gets angry, why I would attack the wall, just remind him it was him that told me to do it. I was just following orders and did what you told me to do. So that's where we're at. So the messenger went and came and showed David all that Joab had sent for him. And the messenger said unto David, surely the men prevailed against us and came out unto us into the field, and we were upon them even unto the entering of the gate. And the shooters shot from the walls upon the servants, and some of the king's servants be dead, and thy servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. And so we see here that it was more than Uriah that died. David's plan was just for Uriah to die, nobody else to die, but I want you to understand, there is collateral damage from sin all the time. I just talked to somebody that I know, and he's just going through a divorce, and they've got kids. And this is a terrible thing for mom and dad, but the collateral damage is the kids. And it's not really collateral damage, it's the real damage. Their lives are never going to be the same. Uriah's life's never going to be the same. He died. Bathsheba, her life is never going to be the same. David's life is never going to be the same. And there was other men who wouldn't come home to their wives because of the command that Joab gave that he normally wouldn't give. And normally those men would not have died, but because of David trying to cover up his sin. And so there is real collateral damage. And so the messenger went and came. And then in verse 25, then David said unto the messenger, thus shalt thou say unto Joab, let not this thing displease thee, for the sword devoureth one as well as another. Make thy battle more strong against the city and overthrow it, and encourage thou him. And when the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she mourned for her husband. Okay? And when the mourning was past, David sent and fetched her into his house, and she became his wife and bare him a son. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. David thought, I got away with it. He allowed Bathsheba her time of mourning, and then he went and called her into his house, and she became his, I think it's the 11th wife. And everybody would say, what? How generous is David to take this widow into his house to meet her needs because her husband's dead? Not knowing David had caused his death, and David was the one who orchestrated all the events behind the scenes. But at the whole time, all of this is going on, and David thinks, well, I've got it done. There's someone who knows all that happened, and that's the Lord. The Lord always knows what happens in our life. He knows our attitudes. He knows our hearts. He knows our sin. He knows our rebellion against Him. He sees the consequences of that rebellion, and He desires that we retreat from it and remove it from our lives as quickly as possible, because He does not like collateral damage. He doesn't like other people getting hurt by our sin. And He doesn't like us getting hurt by our sin. Why? Because it strains our relationship with Him, because we can't have fellowship with Him when we're doing this. We're going to see next week on Wednesday. It caused a schism between the Lord and David for a time until David confessed. And that's what happens in our life. So the thing is, like John says, confess it early, deal with it early, and God's faithful and just to forgive you before there's a whole bunch of consequences from it. And understand we're not immune to temptation and yielding and falling into temptation. But God knows that as well, and He'll give us the strength and a means to overcome the temptation. He gave David more than one opportunity not to sin. And David kept rejecting and rejecting and rejecting. And it led to where we're at now. Let's just close in a word of prayer. Lord, I pray that You just help us to understand this and help us to understand, just like David, we're not immune from rebellion against You, even as believers. Lord, help us not to linger in the face of sin and temptation, but to flee from it. May we be like Joseph and run, not like David and linger. Lord, help us to understand this. This we'd ask in Jesus' name. Amen. In closing, if you turn to 553.